big rocks and all that sort of thing.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the newest episode of the Mick Wall Podcast.
The latest and the greatest.
The latest and the greatest with my very good friend. And
his oldest friend.
My only friend. My only friend.
And even that's tenuous.
We're going to do a special Dead Rock Stars episode today.
Oh, are we?
Following the very sad passing last week of Mr. Jeff Beck, who John professed not to have any knowledge of.
No, I didn't. Well, you phoned me up and you said, let's do a special.
Yeah. And you said...
I'm reviving my old imprint, Dead Rock Stars.
Is that your phone chirping
just
away?
I did try and turn
Christ
it
almighty.
Oh, look.
If you get a 21st century phone, they come with a mute, you know.
Yeah, you said, and I thought, well, you know, I first thing I said was I don't think Jeff Beck's heavy metal, which I don't think he is.
Oh, well, we'll discuss
that. And then I thought, you know, well, what do I know about him? I thought, I know who he is. I know what he looks like.
Do you?
I know that, you know, essentially Nigel Tufnell.
Yeah,
his look and voice are very much based on Jeff Beck.
Well, Jeff Beck's look was widely imitated long before Tufnell, for instance. Cozy Powell, who was in the Jeff Beck group.
Right.
Do you remember how Cozy...
See, Cozy Powell was heavy metal, I'm not denying
but
that.
But he had completely worshipped Jeff Beck.
And did
he had the Jeff Beck look.
But Jeff Beck had the sort of hair. I mean, I'm not being disrespectful here. We're here to say, we're going to say he's great. Don't worry about it. He had the sort of hair that looks like a wig because it's very slightly sticking up a bit before it goes down.
Yes.
And that always makes you look like you've got a wig on.
Well, it does now. But back in the late 60s and early 70s, it just made you look like a geezer.
Yeah, because they didn't know how to cut men's hair then. So...
It's funny, actually, because I remember we used to go to, as a child, you know, when Beck first had his hit with Hi Ho Silver Lining, I was like 10.
Yeah.
And we used to go to this barber shop in South Ealing Road, and they'd have pictures in the window of, like, Jeff Hurst.
Yeah.
And
Bobby Charlton.
No, not Bobby Charlton, no.
Georgie Best.
Georgie, exactly.
Yeah.
And he was Italian guy. He said, hey, you want a Jeff Hurst? You look like you need a Jeff Hurst. I'm going, no, I don't want a Jeff
Hurst. I
don't
look like Jeff Hurst. I want a Jeff Beck. And he go, and he say, all right, put this wig on.
Well, Cozy ended up in that look for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
Ronnie Wood and Rod Stewart, if you look at the pictures
days. Most people who've had that haircut, they are very dedicated to it.
They are. They
love
don't, it,
don't change.
They?
I mean, you say Cozy Powell didn't change. Jeff Beck didn't change.
No. And if you and really Ronnie Wood and Rod Stewart, that was entirely a Beck haircut, except Rod got it to stand up
then Rod sort of went well into the 70s, but didn't he? He had the sort of boot boy look for a while, you know. They had the sort of tartan trousers down to about mid calf, then you had a big pair of boots on.
You're like thinking of the Bay City Rollers, that wasn't Rod Stewart.
Album he did with Atlantic Crossing?
Oh,
what
yeah.
was the cover? What was the cover?
Oh, okay, yeah.
See?
Yeah, okay.
See?
Okay.
You profess to know about these things, but you... Again,
well, that was
once
very
again,
heightened.
You're wrong.
That was a very heightened...
But I'm saying he took
cartoon.
But Rod sort of always took on a different look, didn't he? You're right. He, you know, when it came to the 80s, he had the big shoulder pads and the T-shirt, the Miami Vice thing, you know, he had all that.
So back to Jeff Beck.
Yes.
Okay, the heavy metal thing, you know, we can argue forever. One of the reasons I admired Jeff Beck was because he wasn't only heavy metal. But why he comes into that context is because of his own Surrey Delta beginnings.
Yeah.
You know, Clapton, Beck, Page.
Yeah, I get all that. But I mean, Clapton never came into it either, did he?
Well, he did in Cream. You see what I mean?
No, I don't.
No, no, very much so. No, very much so. In the dawn of time, in the dawn of rock time.
I remember leafing through Kerrang! In 1989, seeing the big Cream feature.
Yeah.
I don't remember that at all, alongside the big Jeff Beck feature.
Well, okay.
I just don't remember.
Take it from
me. I mean, tell me if I'm wrong.
Yes, you're wrong.
I think it was more, you know, Dangerous Toys. And
what?
Dangerous Toys.
What's that?
Sport in a Woody. They're a band in the 1980s. You would Aerosmith.
Forget the 1980s. I'm talking about the 1960s, okay? Cream were the first recognised power trio.
Yes. Yeah,
from which came Hendrix and The Experience. Yeah. And from which came many other things. But Clapton was a blues purist. And you saw after Cream, apart from
Layla...
Well,
he was a blues purist till he got to the 1980s, and then he thought, no, bro, I think I'll be a stadium purist, because there's more money in that.
Well, in fairness, that had begun even before, because after Cream came Derek and the Dominoes.
Yeah, which I loved that album, the Derek and Dominoes album.
But after that, he had his long smack period, and then he came back in 1974 with a version of I Shot the Sheriff by Bob Marley.
Yeah, because he'd been out in wherever it was recording.
Miami.
Yeah, 461 Ocean Boulevard. Yeah.
So he.
I'd like to record there. Why don't we do the podcast there?
Yeah, why don't next week?
We should
just
pod
do that?
From. Yeah. Where are you recording? Well, I'm at 461 Ocean Boulevard today.
Shh, we can just pretend.
No, I don't want to pretend. I want that. Good to me. I want to go to. Because we talk about that before? Didn't someone else go and record there?
What we talked about doing the pod at 461.
No. There was a band that was it the
many
Eagles
bands
or someone
recorded there.
I'm thinking now of the Eagles because they
they
went there
and the
because
Bee Gees,
Clapton had
and
been
Sabbath.
There. Yeah, yeah.
And
it's in the Keys, isn't it? It's in the sort of, you know, the bits of Miami that go out onto little islands and inlets and stuff. Yeah,
yeah.
It's cool.
So
there.
So Clapton in the days of Cream, when Eric is God, became Graffiti. He was he was, if you like, the first kind of obvious guitar hero.
Yeah.
Hendrix comes along, blows them all out of the water. But Clapton left. Clapton had started in the Yardbirds, and he left after For Your Love became a big hit, because to him it was pop nonsense, and he was a blues purist. For Your Love, written by Graham Gouldman, later of 10cc. So Clapton leaves.
It's like sitting here with Pete Frame.
And Beck comes in.
Get on with it. Jeff Beck. Right,
this is
finally.
It. I'm not getting on with it. This is it.
Oh, okay.
So Beck comes in, and immediately the Yardbirds go from being very pop, arty pop, to much more guitar-oriented. First single, Heart Full of Soul.
Right.
That has a great riff, and that is Beck. And you can hear that biting edge and all the rest of it. And then quite quickly, within a year or so, Jimmy Page joins.
Yeah, and then it got good.
Yes, so this is so of course he's not heavy metal, but there's a Venn diagram. There is some.
No, I completely get that. In seriousness, I get that. And all of the guitarists you mentioned, and all of the kind of heavy metal guitarists, would say, "Oh yeah, well Jeff Beck's my major influence."
They do
because he's
say
very
that.
Muso. You know, he's
it's
making yourself sound like it's like
but he
it's
was
like,
a badass too. Though.
It's like I love Radiohead. Radiohead are my. specifically all the albums no one likes.
Yeah, they're my favourite.
That's my favourite. I listen to that all the time.
All the time.
Yeah,
I do.
Steve.
What's
Wilson.
Your favourite Kid A track?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Oh, I'd have to say all of them. There's that great bit in that. Are you a
in
fan,
my mind,
are you a fan
it's
of,
all of them.
I know you're a fan of John Niven's book, Kill Your Friends, which is a novel about...
I've never read it.
Have you? Oh, you should...
Complete jealousy.
You
no, I'm not reading
should,
it.
Honestly, it's very
no, I'm
funny.
Not fucking reading it.
He's got
it.
This bit... Well, it's about...
He had a huge success where Paranoid, which came out long before, died a commercial death.
We now take a brief...
But I'm not bitter.
...commercial break for the bitterness interlude.
The bitterness is always with me. Sorry, no, but kill your friends. Yeah, no, I read all about... I didn't need to read the book.
It's about A&R people. It's not...
The massive amount of press.
It's not about you. It's about A&R people.
But then I wrote Devil Music, and every publisher in London turned it down because they said the main character wasn't likeable enough.
Yeah, well, yes. Admittedly, you've got one there because there's...
Because this
character.
Guy is despicable. But, and you also had Bret Easton Ellis's... what was he called? Psycho Killer. What was he called?
Patrick
American
Bateman.
Psycho. American Psycho. Yeah. Oh, he was likable. I'm not bitter.
No, I can tell.
In those days, Robert, my agent in those days, if it was bad news, he'd send a letter.
Right.
And if it was good news, he'd phone me.
Yeah.
Fuck me. I think they still do. I got so many letters.
They still do that. It's just emails now.
Yeah, but this was a open the envelope. You know, yeah, the first two or three times
open.
I'm thinking...
What's it going to be?
Yeah, what's it going to be?
A check?
Hi, Robert. I loved seeing you at the launch party for fucking Kill Your Friends or something. No, that wasn't out yet. And thanks for sending me this. Unfortunately, I just find the main character too unlikable.
Yeah. Fuck.
But I hope to see you at Abigail's
on your
fucking
your
cheese and
private island party that we're all going to.
Hope to see you at Davos.
Because we're all loaded.
Yeah. And as for this scum with his disgusting tale of
characters. Yeah. All these characters. Yeah. They all want to do characters, don't they?
So don't talk to me about David Niven.
So anyway, the character in David / John Niven. He's an A&R man, but he sort of hates music and particularly hates indie bands, which is quite funny.
Well, there's no
money
in it.
I know, but it's set in sort of 1997 or whatever. So the only music is indie bands, you know. And so if ever anyone, when he's taking bands out to dinner and trying to get them to sign, and they always go, oh, well, you know, what track do you like? He always goes, track three. That's his thing. Because you can never fail. If they go, oh, what track on the demo did you like? Track three.
Because you went deep. Yeah. That means you did a deep dive.
Yeah.
I was flicking yesterday on the telly, as I do, and I came across, I think it was episode 9, season 1 of The Sopranos. Now, I've never watched The Sopranos sequentially.
No. You've lived it. Yeah. You don't need to see it.
But there's this bit where Tony Soprano's nephew, what's he called?
Which one?
No, the young one. You know, the young one who becomes a junkie later on. And he was Lotus.
Yeah. No, I know the guy.
That guy. Yeah. And his bird. Do you remember her?
Yeah. Who's later turns up in Californication as the stripper.
Does she?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Because in The Sopranos, by the time you get to the end of the run, she gets killed. Because
that's right. Adrian. In Californication, she's a stripper who dances to Still of the Night.
What? I must have missed that episode. I must have been passing out at 2 in the morning. Yeah. I'm gonna watch all of that again just for that.
Watch it again just to see that.
Because she was...
But no, she's great. She's very good. Yeah.
Very good. But anyway, so I'm flick. I'm not in the story. I've just hit on this bit where... And I'm going... Because what's his name in the nephew?
I can't think of his name.
I want to call him Tony, but it's not Tony.
No, Tony Soprano.
I know Tony. Little Tony.
It's little Tony. He's Tony, and there's Tony, and there's Tony. All their wives are called
Tony.
Marie.
Big
this is
Tony.
Marie. Here's Marie. There's Marie.
Fat Marie. Yeah. Old Marie. So it's this clip of Adrienne has decided she's going to manage a band, and the nephew character is sitting. They're both sitting at a table in the club watching the band, and I don't know if he's an A&R. I assume something like that, but a very young. That black comedian, Chris Rock. No, the other one, the controversial one.
I don't know.
The one that Netflix got their knickers in a twist over because of a recent live special.
Dave LaChapelle.
Yes, him. That Chris, yeah. He's sitting there looking
Chris,
very young.
This is what we're dealing with. There's a character in The Sopranos whose name you can't remember.
That's
who's
right.
Dealing with an actor whose name you can't remember.
That's right.
Who's now going to say something that you can't remember.
No, I can remember because I just thought this is a great line, you know. So they're watching the band and they're kind of like, so what do you think? Is this your kind of music? And Chappelle's character goes, I like all kind of music. that turns shit green.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it, yeah.
That's the correct attitude.
It is.
So anyway, Jeff Beck.
Yeah.
And Jimmy Page.
Yeah.
It's a brief.
See, Jimmy knew how to turn shit green.
He did.
Yeah.
See, that is one of the things, actually, I do like about Beck, because Clapton figured out how to turn shit green pretty quick. Page was a wizard at it. Beck completely kind of booby-trapped his career at every turn. So, consequentially, made some terrible music, but also some really surprisingly good music. But Beck walks out of the Yardbirds, because this is kind of what he does. He'd walk out of his own groups eventually. And Page stays, and then they eventually become the new Yardbirds, who become Led Zeppelin. Meanwhile, Beck and Page, who were really good friends, even as school kids, goes in the studio with this guy, Rod Stewart, who's been kicking around for years, getting nowhere, but a great singer, Ronnie Wood. I mean, I think they're all in their early 20s. And the drummer was Mickey Waller, who ended up playing on all the Rod Stewart solo albums. But that first album, Truth, it's really, when I was doing the Zeppelin book, I was looking at Truth and looking at Zeppelin 1, because they didn't quite overlap. Truth came first, but they were of the same moment. And, you know, you've got Page doing this acoustic, folky, was it White Summer, Black Summer, whatever it was, on Zep 1. You've got Beck doing Green Sleeves on Truth. And you've got this vocalist extraordinaire that most people have never heard of. And you've got this really powerful rock sound at a time when things were done live in the studio. You had two channels to work on. Very primitive.
A bit like this.
Very like this, but powerful like this. Powerful like this. And so the purists will always say, well, Zepp just ripped off Truth. Not true.
Not true.
But they were...
You wouldn't say that, because Jimmy would phone you up. And he'd have a little word with you. He'd phone you up during Match of the Day.
Well, that's
when he likes to phone you.
To annoy me.
He just wait till Match of the Day starts, and then he knows what he's going to do. It was his birthday, wasn't it, the other day I saw? Pagey.
Oh, yeah. How old is he?
Old man,
So
just old. I mean, just old. That's all you need to say.
Yeah. So Beck does this album, but Beck is also managed by Peter Grant.
Yeah.
And where Page clearly has this idea for a kind of a super group, but heavy like Cream, heavy like Hendrix, heavy as the Who are starting to become. Beck is, he kind of stumbles on it, and.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
It doesn't last. You know, he goes to America. The album's a top 20 record. It goes gold, which was about as big as you could get in America in those days. Does a follow-up, Beckola. Same deal, top 20, gold in America. Nothing over here. But in America, he becomes, you know, because the Yardbirds are super cool in America. You know, you talk to Aerosmith or anybody, they're like the Yardbirds with Beck, you know. But in Britain, and from Beckola, we should mention, came rice pudding.
Oh yeah, you were talking about rice pudding before we came on the air.
Because Coverdale, when the 1987 album came out, Still of the Night.
Still of the Night, Still of the Night, Still of the Night. He was lucky Kingdom Come were around doing an even more flagrant version of Led Zeppelin.
Well, they were hard on his heels, weren't they?
Yeah.
But I'm every, including me when I interviewed him, was saying,
see,
you know,
Lenny
Zeppelin.
Wolf had hair like Jeff Beck, the standing up hair.
You see, they weren't into Zepp, they were into rice pudding.
Rice pudding.
So I'd say everybody was saying to cut, because I heard him say it to other people in interviews, you know. He probably said it to you, you know, what, Zeppelin, you're going
I
for
wouldn't have said that to David. Please, come on.
Because you were too busy hanging with Tawny.
Tawny's just been shopping. I don't know. Do you think she cares if Still of the Night sounds like a bit like Led Zeppelin? No,
well,
she doesn't.
Tawny's like, who?
She. All Tawny says is, David's turned it green in a big way.
David turns shit green.
Yeah, quickly, in a big way.
Certainly right now.
Yeah.
And he would go, no, not Zeppelin, no. That's the influencer is actually rice pudding. And I'd go, rice pudding?
What's that?
What's that? Yeah. Beck. I'm thinking, oh, okay. So I played you a little bit of it earlier, didn't I?
Yeah, it didn't sound anything like it.
No.
I could see where Carl would say it. He's just throwing you off the scent.
And also because it sounds a bit... No, it's a more obscure...
Yeah, it's a different reference.
Yeah, I'm not at all copying Zeppelin.
You wouldn't get it.
It's rice... And in that voice, rice pudding, yeah, you wouldn't, Michael, yeah. Jonathan.
You wouldn't get where I'm coming from.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So while this is going on in England, the albums are not hits at all, but Mickey Most, who was the producer... comes up with this Jolly Wheeze.
When you say Mickey Most was like the original Simon Cowell. Wasn't
he totally was.
Because he was on TV as a sort of evil talent show judge.
New Faces.
The New Faces, yeah.
In the 70s, yeah. After he'd sort of made his bones, because he'd worked with the Animals and the Small Faces.
No one cared about that on the New Faces. I mean, they just thought, Faces. Faces, is that like the Small Faces? It was the Small Faces. Then
is that
it was
like
the Faces.
Rod Stewart and the Faces.
There was the Faces. Then it was Rod Stewart and the Faces. Now it's the New Faces. It's like the Seekers and the New Seekers.
Or the Yardbirds and the New Yardbirds.
Or the Spinal Tap. We were the Originals, but there's really a band called the Originals. So it's become the New Originals.
Oh, dear. And Hi Ho Silver Lining, from memory, I think was written by a guy called Scott English. He wrote loads of hits in the Brill Building. Remember that song? Old Brand. What's his name? Turned into Mandy.
Oh, yeah.
It started as Brandy. That was
you came and you gave without taking. There's a chorus for you. It's a good chorus, that is.
It's great.
All you need, is a spanker jacket.
Hi-ho, silver lining, everywhere you go, oh baby, I see the sun is
now
shining.
Now that's better than rice pudding.
Quite so. But so Rod's up for singing it, and Mo says, no, Jeff sings this one.
Yeah, because Jeff's got... The thing is, the whole point of Hi Ho Silver Lining is you don't need to be a singer to sing it, as evidenced by the amounts of times it's played on New Year's Eve. And everyone... I used to go to a fantastic establishment, a rock club in Camberley.
That's the centre of the rock and roll universe, back in the 80s.
Located, my friends, on the A30. the highway to hell.
Is it still there? It's still
the
there.
The Agincourt is still there. It used to open every Saturday. And it was a rock club. It was like a sort of one of those places, you know, when you go to, again, if you go to Florida, and they do those kind of weird jousting nights. It's a bizarre thing. They think it's English in Florida. And you go to a night out and it's like they have a sort of mock jousting event and you get a banquet. You know? It's ridiculous. And they hold them in these mock
tunes.
What he should do, I mean, if he needs a gig, get
Green
yourself down to Florida. So the Agincourt looked a bit like that. And it was, I mean, semi-full at best on a Saturday night. We used to go there as rock fans.
But...
And the big song, I've got to tell you, the big songs at the end of the night, how the DJ would wrap it all up.
How he'd roll.
First of all, he'd play Hurry on Sundown by Hawkwind. that sort of hippie one. He used to go, oh, that hurry kind of acoustic, on sundown, like a busking see song. What tomorrow brings.
You play Hurry Up. Yeah. Oh, because it was a rock club.
Yeah, because it was like, you know, it just had this sort of hypnotic thing.
Especially if you'd been on the stuff.
Yeah, then he'd, then he'd play a bit of AC/DC just to get you going. But then he'd play Don't Fear the Reaper. Oh, the greatest cowbell
song. Minus
that
tedious...
No, he'd play the whole thing.
Oh, for God's sake.
Because you'd all be dancing around the big circle.
Oh, would you?
And then, yeah, then he'd finish.
Like hippies?
And then when he wanted everyone to leave, he'd play Hi Ho Silver Line. Well, that was the end of the night.
Well, 10 years,
spilling, I'm going to guess... Spilling back out onto the A30.
10 years or so before that, when I was... just sort of graduating from youth club discos.
Yes.
That ended at 9.
Yeah. Did you have your apple juice and your biscuit?
Yeah. Crisps and pop.
Yeah, ready to
crisps
rock.
Crisps and pop.
Here he
mate.
Comes, Mick Wall, ready to rock. Yeah. Fully so formed.
Hold that tizer, out here of the he comes.
Fully formed out of the packet. Mick Wall.
So that transition period between that and actually looking old enough to buy a pint in a pub or
pint
a disco.
Tizer.
So I'd start to go to discos, and and I swear to God,
like
the
a miniature John Travolta of Ealing, he suddenly started going to discos.
No, the only dancing the blokes would do would be on the slow songs, and because I was blind as a bat and refused to wear my glasses, I'd be going to my mates. What's that bird? Is she all right?
They go, yeah,
way over the other side of the room. They go, yeah, she's great. She's looking at you. I went, is she? Yeah, she fancies you. So then you'd have to do the slow walk over there. To would you do you want to dance? Because the dance just be holding on and going slowly in a circle.
Yeah.
And as I get closer and closer, I go, yeah, she's all right. She's all right. Ah, I did a monster.
By
too late.
You couldn't back out by that.
Too late. But anyway, there would come a time every single night towards the end, maybe not the last song, because that would probably be a slow one.
Yeah.
But the big crescendo would be Hi Ho Silver Lining. And when it came to the chorus, the DJ would cut the music and the whole club would be going,
Hi Ho Silver Lining.
It's a great song.
It is. But
do you
Jeff,
know the opening
but
line?
Jeff Beck would be at home with his head in his hands.
Oh, yeah. He never lived it down. He hated it. Hated it. Never played it.
No.
Which is such a shame.
Well,
I remember going to see him once and yelling for it.
Do you want to see 2 hours of jazz rock followed by Hi Ho Silver Lining?
I went to a gig, oh God, late 80s or something, early 90s, and I may have had a very small sherry.
Before you entered the building.
And I remember shouting that me and Crusher probably Hi Ho Silver Lining, Jeff, Hi Ho Silver Lining. You could say, get that fucking arsehole out of here, you know. But opening line, it's a great opening line.
Don't know.
You're everywhere,
nowhere,
baby.
That's where you're at.
Something
in
something,
your hippie
in your hippie hat.
See, that dates it a bit, doesn't it?
Nah. It's timeless. It's a timeless classic. So he has this career in America where he's this star from the Yardbirds who's now put out 2 albums and no singles. It's the new heavy. You're either albums or you're singles, you know. And in the UK, he's just known as this novelty hit single guy. They were invited to do Woodstock. Because I think the first album was 68, second one 69. That's the year of Woodstock. And he just, they didn't turn up. They just blew it.
Well, yeah, I mean, you say they blew it, but yeah, who else did Woodstock?
Yeah. Well, let's see. The debut performance from Crosby, Stills and
Nash. Oh, wow.
Well, they went on to sell millions.
Yeah, if you're
a pretty stupid
hippie.
Doesn't matter. Still a household name. Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah, I know. Remember? Everyone knows Jimi Hendrix. That's the one everybody knows.
Yeah.
And who else did Woodstock?
Santana. No, they were one of the highlights.
No wonder everyone was
stoned. They were
stoned.
One of the highlights
of the
afternoon.
They were, yeah.
Here
comes Carlos doing bloop, bloop, bloop.
No.
Got
a black magic woman.
Yeah, and then he goes, beep. Bleed lip.
Bleed lip. No, they were...
Yeah.
Dip. Lots of percussion. And my man Greg Rolley on keyboards. Dun, 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 dun.
Blip, blip, blip.
Carlos was tripping. One of the Grateful Dead guys had given him this Owsley acid because they were supposed to go on that night. And, of course, Woodstock was all fucked up. They end up being shoved on in the middle of the day and he's completely tripping. And Greg Rolley told me this and he was saying to Greg, my guitar is a snake. It's a snake. I'm wrestling with a snake. And they're going, oh, fuck you now. Anyway, the point is that... That was a completely classic moment, and had they
I'm just saying.
Had they done it, who knows what the course of rock history would have been.
But had they done it, what about all the people that did do it that we never talk about? Oh, you don't think you can say that? You're saying
we
talk
about them.
You're saying it's like some sort of alternative history. Who else? Who else?
I just named
it went
you
on
a
for
whole
3
bunch.
Days. You named 4 people.
What, you want the whole bill?
Well,
I can do
tell
the
me
whole
tell
bill.
Me someone who I don't know that played at Woodstock.
Grateful Dead.
You've said them. Grateful Dead, Crosby, Stills and Nash, Jimi Hendrix and
Santana.
Carlos Santana.
Well, how many
Four.
More do you need?
Well, it went on for 3 days.
Edgar Broughton. He did it. Because
we're all talking about him.
That's right.
Years later.
You bet. Edgar.
What's the best song on his album?
Well, track three. Anyway, shut up.
Always
the
works.
Point is that Rod Stewart... Not fucking happy about not being given Hi Ho Silver Lining to sing. And also, Jeff just, you know, it's like we were talking earlier about when you've got to fill in forms for banks and people that you owe money to. He just couldn't be fucked with it all. So Rod gets a solo deal, then joins the Faces. Beck carries on, but less successfully until he does the Blow by Blow album, which is where the jazz rock...
Right.
comes in.
Yeah.
But back in 73, jazz rock
was
cutting edge.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm not knocking it. No, I mean, now, it just, you know. But then, yeah, it had its moment, I'm sure.
And he'd also recorded with Stevie Wonder. You know, that Superstition was a co-write. Not heavy metal, I grant you, but pretty rocking.
Yeah, something that's exactly how it went, yeah.
Just go, see what I mean, Stevie? Yeah. See what I mean?
Yeah.
Stevie didn't know.
No.
And Blow by Blow again becomes a big hit in America. Now, okay, here's some metal for you. Just before Blow by Blow, he forms a power trio.
Right.
Beck, Bogart,
and
Appice.
Yeah, that's right.
Who were from Vanilla Fudge.
Yeah. It was good to get old Humphrey Bogart, though. I mean, fucking hell.
What?
Humphrey Bogart must have been knocking on a bit by that point.
Well, I always thought it was Dirk.
Oh, it could have been Dirk as well, couldn't it? Old Bogey out the front with his fag telling a story while Jeff's in the background. Dip, diddle, dip,
dip, dip, dip,
dip. And Bogey's like, you see that girl over the side of the bar?
Dirk's going, a beautiful blonde boy in Venice.
Yeah. That's a good band, that one.
Well, their album...
I like that one.
...was another gold record in America. Fuck all over here or anywhere else. And, of course, it was pilloried because by the early 70s, this heavy rock thing is now... It's not cool anymore. It's not cutting edge. That's the 60s. The follow-up to Blow by Blow was Wired, which sounds like it was recorded on a cassette. The sound is terrible. But on there you've got Lead Boots, which was his take
riposte.
On Led Zeppelin.
His
riposte. Yeah, very much so.
Yeah.
And so on and so on and so on and so on. Ainsley Dunbar.
But we want to get to the point. Forget all that. Let's get to the point.
Yeah.
Because what I sort of know about Jeff Beck, what I've seen subsequently, is your old friend, your close personal friend, Ross Halfin, you would take photographs of him. And he had this amazing house. He had like this house in Sussex or somewhere, but it was like a stately home, you know. So you keep saying this went gold and that went gold. He did turn a few things green, Jeff.
Oh, absolutely.
He certainly turned a few things green. And then he was into, like, hot rods and all that sort of thing, doing up his racing cars.
What I heard then, back in the late 90s when classic rock started, I was trying to get an interview with him.
With Jeff Beck?
Yeah. And his manager, whose name I can't remember, but also managed Tony Iommi.
Right.
That was my in.
Yeah.
And he was like, what you've got to understand about Jeff is he just doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah, he's not interested. I like that.
He's
like
genuinely not interested. He said, look, he paid off the mortgage on his house years ago. He doesn't drink or do drugs.
Yeah.
He builds hot rods.
Yeah.
And he plays amazing guitar. And the rest, he doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, but he could talk to me.
Yeah, because I like rice pudding. I'm a big fan of that song.
Yeah. I met him a couple of times impromptu.
Yeah,
but there was nothing to
showed up at his place or something.
No, usually by a page. He was at a page Christmas thing.
Was he?
I don't fucking know. But he was the true kind of man in black, even though he didn't really wear black.
Yeah, but what I want to get to, this is the thing. This is the weird thing.
Mm.
What was his last album and tour?
He toured just a few months ago.
Yeah, with?
Supposed to be, someone. I can't remember. Someone well known?
Someone well known. Yeah. More well known than Jeff Beck. Yeah.
Who?
Johnny Depp.
Oh, yeah, that was it. Yeah.
So this is weird. I mean, isn't this weird? Johnny Depp has a rock and roll fantasy. You know, it's all part of his rock and roll fantasy. And he dresses up his little cosplay rings and all the rest of it.
Fucking weave.
Gets a guitar and starts, you know, messing up. I mean, can't really play it, can he? I mean, no. He said that his white ex-wife cut all his fingers off, he said, when he was in court. Yeah, it sounds like it, actually. Yeah. You know, he's not a tiny
He's
Iommi.
What you'd call a he's rhythm
not,
player.
He's not made. He's a second guitarist.
Yeah, he's a backup.
Certainly when Jeff Beck appears on the stage, he's very much the second guitarist.
In fact, I heard they didn't even plug him in for most of the
show. I mean, he's not gone full Tony Iommi and made himself some fingers out of washing up bottles. But that's what you do when you cut your fingers off.
But here's the thing about Beck. He just guested on so many.
Yeah, I saw that. A lot of female singers, yeah.
But also Blaze of Glory by Bon Jovi. That's Jeff Beck. That? That's him playing. in the wherever that guitar
Shut
break is.
Down. Do you remember Ross used to call him Bog? Here comes Bog. Who's Bog? Blaze of Glory.
He played a really fantastic guitar on the first Mick Jagger solo album, She's the Boss, which was really good.
Yeah, really good.
And then Jagger did a tour.
That's what he said to Mick. Oh, Mick, it's really good.
And then Jagger did a tour and Beck wouldn't go. Right. So he got Joe Satriani in as a poor substitute.
Satriani. Did dip. That's what they do.
It sounds remarkably like Beck when you do it like that.
No. Santana. Santana.
Oh, sorry,
they do. You honestly,
well, I think Carlos,
go and watch
Jeff
Santana. They wander out on the stage and they don't want to go blow their nuts too early. So they go dip, dip, dip.
That's how they go, is it?
Yeah, and then the whole thing starts and then it's like a 15-hour guitar solo.
Like that's a bad thing. So, but...
Johnny Depp, go on.
So he won't go and tour with Jagger, even though that's going to be the easiest job in the world. He did a single back with Rod Stewart in the 80s, People Get Ready, which was a huge hit, and he just never kind of made anything of it. And one of my favourite stories is in 1973 at the famous...
You're going back in time.
Yeah, because this is his story.
Okay.
Famous story that is my favourite. David Bowie's final concert at the Hammersmith Odeon where he announces his retirement. The encore, first encore is the Gene Genie.
Right.
And Beck is there, and Beck is Mick Ronson's idol, blah, blah, blah. So they persuade, I'm sure he didn't take that much persuasion, but Beck comes on. Bowie's the hottest thing in the world at that point. Beck comes on and plays the Gene Genie with them, including, you know, a guitar piece. And they were filming it for that movie. Now, the movie didn't come out for another 10 years or something, but at the time, it was always about to come out.
Mm.
And they said the sticking point was that Jeff Beck wouldn't allow the bit he did to be in the movie.
Yeah.
And when they asked him why, because he's like spoiling it. We want to see yeah. David's final concert, and you won't. And he said, I saw the footage. I didn't like my shoes. I love that. I mean, yeah. You want my opinion? I have no concrete evidence to back this up, but he obviously wasn't being offered enough money. You want me in your movie? Yeah. Cough up.
Yeah.
So he just went, I didn't like my shoes.
Yeah.
I love
that. Unless he had put the wrong shoes on or something.
Were there any such things as the wrong shoes in 1973? I mean, according to you, Rod Stewart was a boot boy.
Yeah, he was, yeah.
And Atlantic Crossing. Even Elton had boots. Have a look.
He did. Elton did it as well. There you go, you see.
They all did it as well.
Bowie. Which is what I said. And you sort of poo-pooed this for some reason.
No.
But anyway, Johnny Depp. So why does he go off with Johnny Depp, you know?
Money, fun, something to do.
Yeah.
I mean, Johnny rang me. You know, yeah. And I said, fuck off, Johnny. I'm too busy with the other Johnny.
Because Johnny Depp, it now strikes me that Johnny Depp had based his whole act around being a bit like Keith Richards, didn't he? His whole thing on the films and so on.
Yeah.
But Johnny Depp, he's a bit like Keith Richards.
Yeah. Do you know what I think it is? Is because Johnny Depp and Joe Perry got really, really friendly. And they're in the Hollywood vampires, weren't they? And who does Joe Perry worship as a guitar player?
Jeff Beck.
And Page, I'm sure, but Beck, yeah. Everybody just, he was just, for them, the coolest, you know, because he never sold out. Kept trying, but he couldn't quite.
Yeah. Couldn't quite turn it green.
Turn shit green.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's our new podcast. T-shirt.
Yeah.
We finally ever get t-shirt. Around.
Yeah, turn shit green.
Yeah.
That'd be a good t-shirt.
I like all kind of music that turns shit green.
Yeah.
That's good. So, in conclusion.
Yes, what do you want me to say?
So, it's interesting, though, that for you, there was no resonance whatsoever.
Not that, I mean, I know who he is and all of those sort of things. I mean, I suppose, yeah, I don't know. Just that music didn't really grab me.
I've just remembered one other funny moment, more recent. When Zeppelin did the O2 in 2007, you know, the big...
Yeah.
And everybody's there from Jeremy Clarkson to Naomi Campbell and, you know. All the rockers were there. So anyone you could name was there. And I'm at the bar and there's Joe Elliott talking to Jeff Beck. And me going, hey, sir. Oh, he's ignoring me. I better shut up. No. Embrace. Manhugs. Jeff, have you met the amazing Mick Wall? Oh, Mick, I've always wanted to meet you. That could have gone like that. It didn't. But I'm literally paying not much attention. I'm trying to get a drink. The next thing, there's raised voices. And you remind me of Joe Elliott in this moment because I don't know what they were talking about, but they're having an argument now. And Elliott says to him, why don't you just fuck off and go and play some fucking jazz?
Yeah, that's what he's for. Yeah. Because you know what Beck had said? He said, I've got the fucking wrong shoes on, Joe. I can't do it, man. Can't do it.
Joe was literally like a pint in each hand, big Yorkshireman. He's like, why don't you fuck off and go and play some of that fucking jazz? Yeah.
And Jeff Beck's just standing in a big pair of clown shoes. Oh, fucking hell.
It always looks strange in his solo shows, like in the, say, the last 10 years or so, where he would always wear the same outfit that he'd worn since the 60s, essentially. Yeah. Like no sleeve t-shirt.
Yeah, but that's the thing. That's the thing, isn't it? They all do that, don't they?
But he'd bring on guests, and they'd be dressed like that it was 40 years later, you know. But he just made no.
Yeah.
There was no meeting of no concessions made at all.
No.
You know, and I think that's part of his allure.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. Now I want you to go home later, and I want you to listen to
rice pudding.
Rice pudding, because there is the beginnings of heavy metal.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, and on that bombshell.
Hey. Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
How do I stop this, Fern?